We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy Monday to you. And it is a Monday, November 25th, Thanksgiving week edition. Bumper to Bumper Sports, kicking off live on 103.7 The Game. For the next 2.5 hours, yours truly, Ben Love, alongside the famous Clint D, taking you home from inside the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. I want to go split screen to start the show today, because our cup runneth over. I want to get to LSU, running over Arkansas, and running into an SEC title game in Atlanta. I want to get to the Saints, surviving a scare from Kyle Allen, Christian McCaffrey, and the Carolina Panthers, and still holding out an opportunity to be the number one overall seed in the NFC. But I'd be remiss and I would be wrong if I didn't start with UL Ragin' Cajuns football. Billy Napier and UL curb stomped Troy 53-3. It was a game that was over in a blink. And it's a game that, like LSU to Atlanta, has the Ragin' Cajuns on a beeline for a rematch and a fourth game in 2 years showdown with App State, most likely to be played in Boone, North Carolina. And the other reason that I want to start with UL, it's not just two Sun Belt Western Division titles in 2 years for Billy Napier, and it's not just the dominating fashion. Our guy Ruffin Rodriguez, who will be with us in a little more than an hour from now, he reminds us that good teams win, great teams cover. That would seem to designate this Cajuns team in 2019 as a great team. No question about it. The reason I lead with UL, it's becoming abundantly clear this might be the best season in program history. And if we're not given that its due, I don't know what's going to do it. For Napier and the Cajuns, I don't care to get into the attendance. I have fought that battle and tried to push the snowball uphill for 4.5 years since I've been here. I've done my part. I don't know what else to tell you. I've had season tickets for 3 years. I was out there, and I get out there for just about every home game that I can. I'm not going to get righteous on you. What I am going to say is this. It has to be recognized what they're doing right now. We'll do it on this show. It's happening throughout the community. People stand up and they say, man, those Cajuns are pretty good this year. I'm here to tell you they're not just pretty good. It might be the best season in program history. The amount of wins, now at 9 out of the first 11 to start the season, certainly would dictate that. I think, however, it's the way that they're doing it. And you could forgive one defensive slip-up at USA. Oh, by the way, that's a game they still won fairly handedly over in Mobile, Alabama. You could forgive that, I think, when you come home the next week and you beat a Troy team that's been a thorn in everybody's side in the Sun Belt, that traditionally has as much talent as anybody, 53-3. And so you're damn right I'm leading off with the Ragin' Cajuns today. That was emphatic. This team has been emphatically good, and there's a reason that they are ARV right now, also receiving votes. My gut tells me they'll knock that title out of the park. By the time this season is over, I think they're going to have digits in front of their name. First time since the 40s that will have happened in Ragin' Cajuns football history. And so the offense, with Regus healthy, exploding in the backfield, but the defense continues to show you why Ron Roberts was nominated as a semifinalist for the Broyles Award. It's been a special season at UL, but let's not undersell it. It might just be the best the program has ever seen. All right, we go split screen. From UL, let's get to LSU next. Joe Burrow continues to cement himself as the Heisman Trophy winner this year. LSU puts a true freshman back at safety, and immediately, Mo Hampton named the SEC Freshman of the Week for his efforts. Jacoby Stevens for the third time in 11 games is the SEC Defensive Player of the Week. Behind the line for four stops, three of them sacks, he's been incredible. And LSU, I think in a lot of ways, exercises some of the defensive demons that haunted them at Ole Miss. I get the fact that Arkansas scored some garbage points late in that game, but LSU up over 50 again. The offense continues to do its thing. And the story, for me, it's almost hard to divert, right? You want to say Joe's the Heisman Trophy front runner, he's the story. You want to say these 2,000-yard receivers are NFL-bound one day. Chase continues to be just a freak, even by LSU standards. But then you really, really would be underselling Clyde Edwards-Helaire and the job that he is doing right now. His averages in that ballgame Saturday night in Tiger Stadium, ridiculous. There's a reason that guy is a finalist for the Doak Walker Award. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, I know this feels contrary. This would be like saying one guy is All-State and the other guy is the district MVP. But in that analogy, Joe Burrow's All-State. He's your Heisman Trophy winner. I'm not so sure that Clyde Edwards-Helaire doesn't deserve to be the SEC Offensive Player of the Year. There, I said it. Come and throw tomatoes at me inside the 237 Roof Studios. He has been remarkable. He has stepped it up a notch in SEC play. That's now six times in seven conference ball games that CEH has gone over the century mark. And all those guys I just told you about, the quarterback, the two-star receivers, the running back, they've combined to do something that's never been done in SEC history. 1,000 yards rushing from one guy, 1,000 yards receiving from two guys, and 4K through the air for your QB. So that magical 2013 season we always reference with Mettenberger, Beckham, Landry, this one's better, and it's not even close. These guys have been special. And, oh, by the way, within all that, you talk about everybody eating. Haven't even mentioned the fact that Randy Moss's kid, yeah, that's right, Thad Moss, most receptions by a tight end in a season in school history. Everybody in this LSU offense is just feasting. All right, we finished the split screen. We've gone from vermilion and white to purple and gold. Who dat nation? Let's go black and gold. Like LSU and like UL, the Saints put up a bevy of points. But unlike those two, they did have to sweat it out. And I wonder, this is an easier formula and blueprint to say than it is to actually put into action, but I wonder if the second quarter into early third quarter wasn't a bit of a blueprint on how you can at least stymie this Saints offense for a little while. Keep them off the field. Kyle Allen was the master of the checkdown. And, of course, Christian McCaffrey is one of the best that's doing it. We had that discussion a week or two ago on the show, who's the best running back in the NFL? Well, Saints fans, I don't know how you feel after that game yesterday, but McCaffrey can catch and run and do so many things. It feels like it was an automatic 7 or 8 yards every time Kyle Allen checked down to him in that ball game. But the end result, and they did a good job on the CBS broadcast of illustrating this, I believe it was 1 hour and 7 minutes of real life time, not game clock, real life time, like 1 hour and 7 minutes from one Breeze completion to another. The Panthers did an excellent job of mucking that thing up early, and the Saints defense, I think, let them back in it a little bit late. So, yes, there were some things that make you scratch your head. Untimely and costly penalties from Cam Jordan, the defense on third down, but wow, Jordan, Demario Davis, when they had to, those guys did get it done. And as always, Zane Gonzalez last year for Cleveland wet the bed. Well, there was a new guy, Mr. Sly, who's not going to leave the Big Easy feeling very good, and not just because of the hand grenades and hurricanes after his effort for Carolina yesterday. You give Breeze and that offense that much breathing room at the end of a game, I had that feeling, and you probably did too, that the Saints would come from behind even if they needed seven. Once they only needed three, it was a bit of a foregone conclusion for me. And the Saints are now 9-2. Everything else that you wanted to happen yesterday, in my opinion, with one exception, went your way. You got a 49ers win last night, and emphatically, over the Green Bay Packers. That's what you wanted. You knocked Green Bay back a notch. Now you got a chance to beat San Fran in a few weeks and have home field advantage and the tiebreaker over them. But the only thing that didn't work out, if you're New Orleans, is Seattle went on the road and flummoxed the Philadelphia Eagles. But three games, three wins for the three programs and franchises that we frequent. Unless your favorite high school football team lost last weekend, I just don't know what else to tell you. You got to be in a good mood today. I know that we are, and we've got our usual great guests coming aboard. Gus Kattengill, talking Saints football, live for the Big Easy in less than 20 minutes. Ruffin Rodri coming aboard in exactly an hour, and James Buehr's on an upset-filled second round of the high school football playoffs. James will join us at 6 o'clock. So stick around. That and more coming your way. And after a brief timeout, you've got more Bumper to Bumper Sports. Ben Love for Relief Windows. Thinking windows, doors, and siding in Acadiana. Think Relief Windows. And
sinking or swimming, Ben Love is just the guy to lead you in the right direction as you make your way back home from work. Now, back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Talked a little bit of everything to open the show today. Now, as we solicit your input, we're going to take it to the college football level. LSU all over Arkansas, to nobody's surprise. There was one big surprise, however. Way out west, Oregon and Utah went out on the road. Utah fetched a win. The Ducks did not. They went to the desert and lost to Herm Edwards and Arizona State. Hey, you play to win the game. Oregon did not do that. They're going to drop out, I would imagine, of the top 10 in totality tomorrow night during the college football playoffs' fourth release of its rankings. And it leads me to wonder, I hate to put it this way, but this is the way that a mind like mine works sometimes. Who is next in line to get screwed? That's kind of what this whole thing feels like to me, because you've got three teams that control their own destiny. Georgia, I guess, technically controls its own as well. If Georgia wins in Atlanta, yeah, they're going to get in. So you could say there are four teams that control their own destiny, but not all four can, because two of them will play each other in a few weeks. So if and when that fourth spot becomes available, who feels like that team that they probably think they're going to get in, but nope, the rug's just going to come out from underneath them? You want an example? I always go back to Penn State winning the Big Ten title and then Ohio State, which didn't even play in the game in Indy, getting in over them. That's now been some 4 years ago. And everybody held against Penn State losing pretty badly to a middle-of-the-road Big Ten team in the regular season. So I'm looking for you to identify who this year's maybe version of that year's Penn State could be. I'll get to the question. CD, we'll play the music first.
Love, exciting and new.
Now that you know what you know, which team do you feel is most likely to get left out of the college football playoff? Call us up, give us your team, and give me a reason. 706-0111. Clint, what say you?
It feels like it's almost stealing, Ben, when you threw this question my way, because it felt like there was just one team at the top of the list for me in my mind. And it has to be, without a doubt, the Georgia Bulldogs, because of the fact they've got LSU in 2 weeks' time in the SEC title game, and at the fact they did not look as dominant as maybe you maybe expected.
I told you Texas A&M. I told you that was coming.
Yeah. I thought it was going to be like a much more competitive ball game, but 19-13 was definitely not what I expected to see.
That wasn't competitive enough for you?
No. Well, I'm saying like this, I thought this would have been a lot more high scoring. Let me put it that way. I thought it would have been a lot more high scoring, and we would have wound up being able to say, hey, like Georgia really got a great win out of it because it was a hotly contested, high scoring ball game. They were able to come out the victors. And that makes them look good heading into that SEC title game where they're playing a high-powered LSU offense.
All right, let me get to a team that, to me, is a bit of an enigma. And now that Oregon has been knocked out of the realm of contenders, not just in the Pac-12, but I think for the college football playoff, a lot of focus is going to shift to Utah. And I expect the 11 Utes to be, I would think, sixth in line After all, Mac Jones came in and led Alabama to a resounding win over a very bad non-conference foe. Utah won with authority and won going away 35-7 at Arizona. I think that Utah, Clint, has a really good chance to win the Pac-12 title game, be 12-1, and get left out. And for me, the reasoning is this. Who exactly did they beat? I look at their schedule. They began at Brigham Young, and they beat BYU 30-12 on the road in a Holy War game. All right, great. Who else did you play from outside your conference? Northern Illinois and Idaho State. This Utah team reminds me a lot of Chris Peterson's Washington team that got into the college football playoff and really didn't beat anybody with the pulse. Because let us remember, when you play in the Pac-12, you play 9 conference games, one more than the SEC, just for example. That means you only play 3 out of conference. I just gave you their 3 at BYU. I don't know how much that's impressing a lot of people. BYU is 7-4 this year, so they're not horrible. But that's their marquee game outside of the conference. Northern Illinois, the Wolfpack have been good in the MAC before. Not this year. They're 4-7. Idaho State is an abysmal 3-7 coming out of the Big Sky. Utah beat nobody with a pulse outside of their conference. Now you're going to say, Ben, who'd they beat in the conference? Well, they beat Washington State. They beat both teams, or I should say, I'm sorry, they beat Oregon State, but they don't play Oregon this year. They beat Arizona State, Cal, Washington, UCLA, Arizona. I just don't know how much that does for anybody. Their loss, by the way, at USC, 30-23. And all that SC team is doing, well, they're 8-4, and they're doing their best to get their head coach fired for like the umpteenth straight season. Utah, Clint, has the feel of a team that would be jumped by Oklahoma, in my opinion, if chalk holds, if Ohio State's in, Clemson is in, and LSU beats Georgia, Utah has the feel of a team that would be jumped by Oklahoma, and I still don't think Alabama. There's just something about this tied team without Tua. I know they've got the chance for Mac Jones to annihilate Auburn in the Iron Bowl this week, and that would be a pretty good resume builder in life after Tua Tagovailoa. I don't think it's going to happen, though. I still have Alabama on the outside looking in. I think that Oklahoma is resurrecting itself. I mean, like a phoenix from the ashes, brother. I tried to bury them a few weeks ago in this program, and they won't go anywhere. They came from behind, or they, I guess, staved off TCU would be a better way of putting it. Now I think suddenly Oklahoma's got an opportunity. For me, the answer to this question is Utah. Utah's got the feel of a team that's going to get left out, and in their eyes, they would be screwed by not making the college football playoff. Wanted to go there with you, and we're happy to take your call as well. Clint, before we hit a break, who do we have that wants to come aboard?
We got Jamie who wants to play in the sandbox.
Let's get him aboard the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Jamie, who's getting left out?
Hey, Mr. Love, I got to agree with Clint. I'm going to go with Georgia, but I have to disagree with you. I think that Utah has a better chance than Alabama, and that pains me to say as an Alabama fan, but those are my two, are Georgia and Alabama. I just see one SEC team making it, and unfortunately that's LSU. So I appreciate you taking my call.
Always, brother. And let's be clear about one thing. Georgia is a very good answer to this question. Because they're going to play the number one team in the country. I don't care that it's sort of in their backyard. Georgia's playing the number one team in the country. They'll be decided underdogs. Yeah, that'd be a pretty good formula to get bounced out of consideration. But I want to make sure we're all still on the same page about something. If Georgia holds serve against the nerds from Georgia Tech this weekend and then beats LSU, there will be two teams in the college football playoff in the SEC. Sorry, Bama. Sorry, Utah. Sorry, Oklahoma. You're not leaving out 12-1 LSU. I'm not even leaving that open for discussion. They're not going to be denied at this point. And so there is still a way that you have two teams in the SEC in. I don't think anybody within the sound of my voice is rooting for that to happen, nor am I. This has been a magical LSU season. I think that they're going to stamp it home in 2019 in Atlanta, same way they did in 2011 over Georgia in Atlanta. And so LSU, Clemson, Ohio State, if they hold serve, they're absolutely in. No question. But after that, who might get left out? Georgia? Hey, that one makes sense. I get it. They're going to run into a buzzsaw, it feels like, in December. Is it going to be Utah? Is it going to be Oklahoma? Who is next in line that's going to feel the wrath of this thing? That is what we're discussing. Appreciate the call from Jamie. Appreciate you for dialing us in. When we return, we're going to New Orleans. We're going to bring you Gus Cattingill as we talk about the 9-2 New Orleans Saints. And after this brief timeout, you've got more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
You say tomato, I say tomato. The famous Clint D says something that none of us will agree with. Back to more top shelf analysis for your drive home. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
We broke out the right music at the right time, and we got the right guy. Aboard the Ardco Equipment Hotline, our pleasure to bring back Gus Cattingill, host of the Sports Hangover ESPN 100.3 in the Big Easy. Gus, how are you today?
Doing well, Ben. How you doing, my man?
I'm doing great. I'm going to lead off something you may not have expected. Okay. The Saints last year losing to the Rams brings about the opportunity to review pass interference calls, and it stings them yesterday in that game. Is that irony that you just can't even stand to watch?
Right. I don't know what bothered me more, the fact that it did come back to haunt them, or the fact that the national folks were just in love. Oh, how great. Oh, the irony. You know what? Don't yuck it up over there. That's a terrible call. Besides the fact that there's no context in the game here as well, because from the Jared Cook pass interference to, you know, an issue with Michael Todd, I mean, that game, that was on edge for Saints fans in the Dome. You could feel the energy. It was just they were contentious. And look, Sean said it at the end of the game, as much as he could without trying to get fined, that it just, look, it's one of those things where New York had a bad day. He said it that way.
Diplomatic. We appreciated that from Sean. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of Saints fans appreciated the effort from Jared Cook. You mentioned the one PI call, but wow, what a revelation. And when he plays like that, taking over the middle of the field, they're almost impossible to stop.
Yeah, and then, you know, it goes back to the beginning of the season. I remember we had calls, and I'm sure you did too, from fans going, hey, look, you know what, you know, is he, I mean, they were trying to compare him to, you know, the unfortunate signing, you know, out of Indianapolis, the tight end there. And I just, look, I look at it from this perspective. You have to make the play calls. I mean, he can only catch the balls if he's thrown to him, and if they, you know, have plays called for him. And you didn't see that a lot at the beginning of the season. So yesterday was a clear game plan in which they were like, look, I don't know if Carolina was trying to take away Michael Thomas. He still got 10 receptions. But that's what you saw with Drew Brees. They look, Traquan Smith only got one catch. He was targeted three times, but he had one reception. It happened to be a touchdown. But that's the mismatch, and that's what we saw in training camp. I'm not surprised. I think it's something that you have to continually go to, and you can see the advantages that he has.
Talking now with Gus Cattingill, 103.7 The Game. Saints now 9-2. Defensively, not their best effort, and yet they still had some big-time plays. How do you review that effort against the Panthers?
You know what's interesting? I'm looking, because it was definitely a topic today, right, on our show as well. You know, how do you measure that performance? What did you think? What did you see? And what's nuts about it, then, is they had four sacks. You look at Christian McCaffrey, he didn't have 100 yards rushing. He didn't have 100 yards receiving. But it sure didn't feel like the same defense dominated that game, right?
No.
It sure didn't feel like it was a comfortable thing. So, and I will also throw that whole statistical feel to the offense. If you look at it, I mentioned Thomas had 10 receptions. Kamara and Latavius Murray both combined ran for over 100 yards. You know the stat, when the Saints run for over 100 yards, they tend to do well and win. And Drew Brees had three touchdowns. And so statistically, if you miss the game and you look at it and you go, look, Latavius Murray and Alvin Kamara shared the ball in the backfield. Neither was used more than the other. You would have thought that it would have been a good game, but it was just one of those things. So I don't know if stats kind of made you, really told you the whole story of the game, right? And it's nuts, because defensively, I don't get it, man. That drive before halftime, All they have is Christian McCaffrey, Ben. If we were playing Madden and we selected the middle linebacker, when they snapped the ball, I would keep my eyes on him and chase him, wouldn't you? I mean, like, you know that's him. So we had calls come in, well, it was defensive breakdown. I'm like, I understand that, and I understand the principle of defensive breakdown. That means something got confused. Defensive breakdown would be two players went after McCaffrey, or three, and he left the tight end wide open. That's a defensive breakdown. When he comes out the backfield and there isn't a safe player within 10 yards of him, that's not a defensive breakdown. That's a what the bleep just happened. I mean, I said, like, I don't understand how that's possible. I mean, he's literally the only guy killing you on that drive. And on that drive, repeatedly, he was left on man coverage, and he was just open out the backfield. Look, I get it, man. He's an MVP guy, and he's having a tremendous season. But I'm making somebody else beat me, man. I'm literally making somebody else beat me.
Gus, I'm so glad that you brought up the drive before halftime. I said in my open today, and I wondered aloud, is this a blueprint once the Saints get in the playoffs, once they play the 49ers? If you could play keep away, you've got a heck of a chance. Is what we saw, Breeze going some hour and 7 minutes of real time between completing passes, is that replicable? Can you kind of cause this Saints defense to bend and then break a little and keep Breeze off the field?
Well, just like anything else, you have to have personnel, right? So you might have a way to defeat, like, I'll take, you know, say LSU and Auburn. Yeah, you would love to have that defensive line, but you have to have those players that make up that defensive line in order to do the things that they did to LSU. And I think the same thing, you have to have a dynamic back that can catch the ball out the backfield, that can put stress on the defense that way, that can rush the football as well. Quarterback doesn't make a lot of mistakes. He makes good decisions with the football. And you got to have Luke Kuechly. You got to have guys of that nature. But when it comes to just the offensive side, like you're talking about on the defense end, you have to have those type of backs. So I quickly look at the teams that the Saints would have to probably go through to get to the NFC Championship game on Miami. And you're looking last night at a clear difference, right? I don't buy or trust Green Bay's defense or run game throughout the entire season. That's why Aaron Rodgers has been an MVP candidate. You saw what happened yesterday. San Francisco has a head coach that took the Falcons to the Super Bowl because he had Coleman and Freeman in the backfield. I am so convinced, and Sean's admitted it so to an extent. He went and got Kamara to pair with Ingram because he saw that year of what Matt Ryan could do with Julio Jones and everybody else. And you had two backs in the backfield that can score touchdowns via a handoff or via a screen pass or a toss out the backfield. And what you're seeing, Coleman's in San Francisco, and you're seeing now Jimmy G use the tight end. He's using the running back. And more importantly, they have a strong defense. But the point being, if that's the blueprint to Saints defense, you have to have the personnel. San Francisco showed me yesterday they could do that because they didn't have the run game going 2 weeks ago, and Jimmy G was able to step it up on the passing game. So that's the team that Sunday, December 8th game is going to be key, right? You want to see what that's going to be like in that game because they're a physical football team. And the thing that concerned me and a bunch of callers today was the lack of physicality we've seen at home the last two times the Saints have played.
Wrapping up with our man Gus Kattengill, a tale of 2 weeks, I would say, without Marshawn Lattimore in the secondary. Somehow, that group without Lattimore really put Godwin and Evans in shackles in Tampa, and yet DJ Moore went crazy yesterday. How'd that happen?
Probably paying attention to, you know, Christian McCaffrey, which is nuts because he's the one hurting you. So I would put it to you like that on that aspect of it. And I think you just wonder if it is going to be sustainable. And look, like I said, this week being a short week, I wonder if we see Lattimore. If not, they try to rest him up and have him ready to go against San Francisco, in which they can sort of help out with Coleman and others to do so. So I don't know. It's crazy, right? Because the Tampa receiver is a lot better. But Kyle Allen's making better decisions than Jameis Winston in that game. He threw four interceptions.
And I think you might have just hit it on the head. Right now, Kyle Allen is more trustworthy than famous Jameis Winston.
Yeah, that's what it comes down to, really. And, I mean, it's nuts. We have a guy that comes on every Tuesday out of Tampa, and he literally is like, that's the question everybody asks me all the time. What are they going to do with Jameis Winston? Do they give him an extension? Do they give him a contract? What do they do? And they don't know. they don't know what they're going to do. They want to keep waiting and seeing. He's just going to be what he is, man. You're going to get good Jameis, bad Jameis. And that seemed to always be the same thing as well when it came to Cam Newton, right? It was good Cam and bad Newton. And bad Cam Newton. When it was good Cam Newton, he's tough to beat.
Yeah. Saints, 6.5-point favorites going to Atlanta on Thanksgiving Thursday night. They're 9-2. Thanks for helping us along this ride to figure out how they got there, Gus.
Always a pleasure, Ben. Have a happy Thanksgiving, bud. Talk to you next week.
You as well, man. That's Gus Kattengill, ESPN 100.3 in New Orleans. And I'll share this with you, Clint, and our listeners before we hit our final break of the hour. This is maybe the ultimate pre-shade. Fact is, this will probably be better than actual throwing shade today. So, yes, we still want you to listen to us in 45 minutes, but I enjoyed this immensely. A couple of weeks back, about the time that your boy Marcus Mariota was getting benched for the Tennessee Titans, my brother sent me this fantastic meme. It's a picture, and I'm guessing it was right around the time these guys were being drafted 1-2 overall, some almost half decade ago. It's a picture of Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota, and in between them is like a huge mascot-sized Mickey Mouse. And then the caption underneath said, "You can only build a franchise around one of these three."
That's outstanding.
You know that's freaking good.
It's amazing.
Mickey Mouse, Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota. You can only build a franchise around one of these three. All right, well, fast forward some 4 years later. One of them has been benched. Ryan Tannehill is blazing in his place for the Tennessee Titans. The other, I mean, they were elated and jumping through hoops to be able to put Fitzmagic in for him last year. And now they're wondering, should they absolutely sink their battleship and give that guy an extension? Let me save them some headache. The answer is no. Just saying. We'll hit our final break of the hour. And after this timeout, we're right back in with more of the good stuff. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
.1037 The Game is a Acadiana sports station, and we go wherever you go with the free .1037 The Game mobile app.
The app has me connected all the time.
Catch the live stream anytime or listen on demand to all of your favorite live and local shows.
Download the app.
The .1037 The Game mobile app keeps you connected to all our blogs and the Clubhouse Rewards Club, where you can win spectacular prizes.
Play clock at 2.
Download the free .1037 The Game mobile app today. Presented by Visit Avery Island. One of them is famous in Cajun country. The other has a set of pipes that never quits. Seriously, we've tried before. Together, Ben and Clint bring you home on 103.7 The Game.
When we got hired, this is the offense we wanted to bring to LSU. It took a while. But I'm proud of Steve Ensminger and Joe Brady, the whole offensive staff, on what they're doing.
LSU off to an 11-0 start, offensively doing something no SEC team has ever done before, quite literally. As we shared with you earlier in the program, a 4,000-yard passer. It's so difficult to do, I can't even say it. They've got two guys that have gone over the 1,000-yard mark receiving, and then 1,000 yards from a back as well. So this is now officially above and beyond what Mettenberger, Landry, OBJ, and Jeremy Hill did in 2013. It's pretty remarkable when you consider it. And you've even got, as I mentioned earlier, Thaddeus Moss, your tight end. More catches than any tight end has had in a single season in program history. So they're doing some prolific things, and here we are. We are left at the doorstep, the final game of the regular season. It's interesting. I'm going to let you hear the famous Ed Ogeron clip that's making the rounds. Something he said late Saturday night inside of Tiger Stadium. And I think that any other game, if you had a team that was 11-0, they're favored by 17 against an opponent that everybody feels like they should win, there would be a fairly large, if not an enormous, reason to worry about a letdown. And so my very first thought about this LSU A&M game this coming Saturday night in Death Valley is, well, you don't have to worry about that. LSU is taking on a team that not only beat them in seven overtimes last year, The outcome itself is hotly contested. The antics on the field after the game, coming after a legend in our area like Kevin Falk, those were very hotly contested. You got a former LSU assistant in Damian Craig who was doing everything that he did. You have the incident with Kragthorpe and then Kevin Falk, John Battle getting in there and throwing a haymaker and mollywopping somebody. That thing was brutal last year in College Station from a purple and gold perspective. And so, with the head coach from LSU returning, with the quarterback bringing as much swagger as one wheelbarrow behind him will carry back for this game, and with so many key players in last year's 7-OT tilt in College Station, with so many guys back having that feeling and having this much to play for, the very first thing I'll tell you about this season finale, I don't think you're going to have to worry about LSU being up for this ball game. In fact, Ed Ogeron put that to bed immediately after LSU thrashed Arkansas.
No question. There's no question about that. It's going to be on.
You know what? The other thing that comes to mind is I never in a million years thought that we would have a coach that would be at LSU and that would be a soundbite machine anywhere near the level that Les Miles was. Somehow this guy is doing it. I mean, they couldn't be any more different. Miles, I mean, from Ohio, played at Michigan, coached for the Dallas Cowboys, Oklahoma State. I mean, there was nothing about this guy that was really Louisiana. You know, not the way he talked, the mannerisms, the phrases. And yet he spun some of the most uncanny yarn that any head coach in any country of any sport has ever spun. This guy now, Ogeron, is as South Louisiana in particular as they come. And he comes out, he speaks his mind, he's been able to back it up. Even the things that he says behind closed doors that should never get out becomes something that, you know what, put it on a shirt, print the shirt, sell it. Roll Tide, what? And I can't say the rest. The guy's become a quote machine. And he has this feel about him that everybody's starting to rally around. And when it comes to this LSU A&M game, I don't think he even had to say that. But he did, and now LSU Nation feels the same thing. It's on. I mean, that's all there is to it. Saints played Thursday night. All right, that's cool. High school football, quarters and semis, Friday night. Hey, that's cool too. But the real show, it's on. Saturday night in Tiger Stadium. Longtime LSU coordinator Jimbo Fisher bringing a team in that has absolutely gotten its jollies off of that win last year in Kyle Field. If you've seen the pictures this year, there is a huge painting and rendering of an A&M player mossing an LSU defender in Jimbo's war room. You've got Kellen Mond, starting quarterback for A&M, tweeting about it last week, about the knee that hit the ground that wasn't called, or at least it was reversed. A&M as a program is hanging its hat on that win from a year ago. That's the way the Aggies are defining their program in the SEC. And I'm not telling them they shouldn't. For them, that's as big as it's gotten since A&M has entered the SEC. It was year one of the Jimbo Fisher era. I'm sure they and their fans felt like LSU and the fans here did when Ed Ogeron and company lost in Bryant Denny 2 years ago. And he said, we're coming and we ain't backing down. I'm sure their fans felt the same way. After last Thanksgiving weekend, north of Houston. And so now you've got an opportunity for LSU to exact some revenge there, to throw up some crooked numbers, for Burrow to further cement the Heisman in one of the stupidest offensive seasons anybody's ever, I mean, conceived. I think LSU is going to do some very serious damage to that scoreboard against Texas A&M, and it should be must-watch theater. I know it's going to be must-listen-to theater. That's why we'll carry the game on Acadiana Sports Station. All right, quickly, let's get out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Keith, welcome in. What do you make at LSU A&M?
Hey, man, I think it's going to be fireworks, strictly on the LSU side. and you touched on Ogeron being the unorthodox coach in the SEC who pretty much gives a straightforward, no button-up type answers. He lets you know how it is, and his players gravitate towards that. And if I was A&M, I would keep my mouth closed, but too late for them. They just opened up a can that in the first quarter this could get ugly, and you could find the guy that's getting paid $70 million trying to question everybody else and answer why he should be the guy for A&M.
Fair enough. Keith, I appreciate the dial. Enjoy the game this weekend.
Thank you. You too, Ben.
So let's say this before I run out of time here. The only thing, I wouldn't say that it worries me, but the only thing that I think about with the way that this thing is heading towards Saturday night, this has the potential to be one of those ugly games too, and I don't just mean statistically. This one has a chance to cause hands to be thrown. There's no two ways around it. The blood is worse here than it is for LSU-Bama, and it's not even close. That's just a really hard game against the great opponent. The blood here is probably even worse than LSU-Florida, and holy hell, is that hard to accomplish. This one has the chance to be a game that could get somebody ejected and then banished for the first half of the LSU-Georgia game. That's the only spot where you've got to make sure your guys walk the line if you're Ogeron and LSU in this one. You can't have cooler heads not prevail and cost yourself in a game that you need in Atlanta. I know I've been talking about LSU being able to lose it and still get to the Final Four. That ain't the blueprint for anybody. So wanted to make sure I threw that out there. But we'll have a lot more LSU A&M conversation this week. That much you can count on. Why? Because it's on. And now we got to get to our final word of this hour.
What's up, Katie Anna? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Boys. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Stupefying. 6 carries, 188 yards, and 3 touchdowns. Again, this season from Clyde Edwards-Helaire is one of the most stupefying things we've seen in recent LSU history. Better than Fournette's best, better than Geis's best. The unsung player from Catholic Baton Rouge, the one that everybody wanted Travis Etienne instead of. And I ain't saying the kid from Jennings isn't all that. He is. But it's stupefying what Edwards-Helaire has meant to this team and this offense. He is the perfect fit for what they are doing. He deserves his propers, and he probably deserves some hardware as well. That's the final word of this hour, and it's brought to you by the Village Station. We're coming back. We got Ruff and Rodri at 5:15, James Buers at 6 o'clock. Stick with us. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 103.7 The Game.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
We are off and running. Hour 2 of 3 underway. And coming at you, I'm Ben Love, and this is Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 103.7 The Game. The famous Clint D in tow for the next 90 minutes. A couple of great guests will join us. Ruff and Rodrigue in less than 15 minutes. We'll go in on LSU-Arkansas. Probably spend a little more time looking ahead to LSU-A&M. And don't forget James Buers in an hour. Looking ahead to this Thanksgiving weekend of high school football. It's the quarters or the semis of the state playoffs, depending on the bracket you're in. We'll do a little bit of review from last Friday, an upset-riddled Friday night in college, or high school football, I should say. And then we'll look ahead to this next round. So James Buers with us at 6. I want to start this hour with an interesting statement. And leave it to Nick Saban to provide bulletin board material that may not be utilized until next November. It's possible that it will be needed before then, but I don't know that it will. I'll just share with you and let you decide. Because as much as we can revisit an interesting sink or swim question. As much as I could keep telling you how much LSU thrashed Arkansas, I wanted to start the 5 o'clock hour with this because it's that bold. Nick Saban, earlier today, like Ed Ogeron, conducted his weekly Monday press luncheon. And when asked about Auburn in advance of this weekend's Iron Bowl, Saban said of the Tigers / War Eagle / Plainsman, quote, "This is the best team we've played probably so far this year," end quote. How offended are you at that? I'm betting that that has gotten to some of you via social media somehow, some way. Maybe you're just hearing it now on your drive home for the first time all day. Don't steer this thing off the Atchafalaya. Keep it in between the lines, but call me and let me know what you make out of that, because I've got some thoughts. 706-0111. Auburn, probably the best team that Alabama has played this year. I take exception to that, not just because I am from and live in South Louisiana. I take exception to that because I attended the game in Bryant-Denny Stadium, and on the scoreboard, it ended as a 5-point game. That's not the way that thing went down. LSU was a double-digit, better-than-Bama team, basically from wire to wire. And the other thing that I think we've learned during the Saban era is this. If you try to play down and dirty and out-physical Alabama, you're almost always going to come out on the wrong side of that, because they usually have more than you do, right? More 5 stars. It's not that their best are always better than your best, you know, top 4 or 5 players in the field. It's just that they have more than you typically. The way that you can beat Bama during the Saban era historically is to have an offense that can play with them, to have an offense that, you know what, we're going to put up 38-plus. You got to come find us, Saban. You got to be able to play with us. Clemson's done it. Ole Miss has done it. A&M did it with Johnny Football. LSU did it with Burbank Joe, and a guy that I think deserves to be the SEC Offensive Player of the Year, Clyde Edwards-Helaire. That's how LSU did it. Yeah, the defense made a couple of big plays when it had to, right? A big interception before the half that gave LSU a late touchdown before intermission to help turn the tide of that game, pun intended. A big sack in that ball game as well when they needed it late. So LSU did have some defensive plays that were required to get across the finish line. But offensively, they boat raced you. Auburn is not about to do that. Not saying they can't win the game. Bo Nix is not putting up 40 on this Alabama defense. I'll be shocked if we wake up on Sunday and that's the outcome. Where Auburn is elite this year is along their defensive line. Does that make them the best overall team that Bama's played? I don't think so, and I would take exception to that. But I think they might have the best defense that Alabama's seen. That part would be fair. So those are some of my quick thoughts. I'm curious about yours. 706-0111. And we'll take a trip now out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Max, you are up. Your reaction to Saban's comments.
Ben, I look at it like a little kid running away after he just got woke by the bigger kid. Saban can say whatever he wants. LSU hung it on him in his own house, and he's just trying to save face, get his team ready for Auburn.
That's fair. Motivating his team. I appreciate it, Max. He's motivating his team through the media. Won't be the first or last time that happens. Like a kid running away after he got whooped. It's just beautiful imagery there. We'll go back out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Tony, thank you for waiting on us. Your reaction to those comments.
Yeah, I'm not offended at all by it for a couple of reasons. One, I know it's just coach speak and that's what they have to do, but the biggest reason is if he thinks it's the best team he's played, which he's saying it's better than LSU, and LSU beat him, it just sounds to me like he's conceding defeat, you know, in what's supposed to be his biggest game of the year. So I guess I'm fine with that if that's how he wants to play it.
What a great way to look at that. He's justifying the fact that this will be a difficult game for his team.
Yep, and like I won't really be surprised if Auburn beats them. You know, I'd be excited if they did, but I wouldn't be really surprised either.
I think that's fair. Tony, great call. Thanks for dialing in.
Thanks for taking me.
Yeah, you got it, man. Hey, you know, he's not wrong. We got time for more. 706-0111. The Iron Bowl this year, it'll be played on the Plains. Bama installed as an early 4-point favorite. 2:30 CBS kickoff on Saturday. And wouldn't surprise me either if Auburn won. Yeah, Mac Jones is pretty darn good in that last game that Bama played. I think it's probably accurate to say he's among the best backup quarterbacks in the SEC, if not the country. And you could plug a lot of guys into this Alabama offense with those receivers, and if they're poised enough, they can have success. But I'm not going to take away what Mac Jones did. I know it. They played Western Carolina. But dude was 10 of 12 for 275 and three touchdowns. That's getting it. I mean, I'm not going to take anything away from him. That is getting after it. But when 3-5 from Auburn are bearing down on you and you're on the road, I want to see how he and Bama react in this ball game. Again, there's no question in my mind. LSU, top to bottom, is a better team than Auburn. I think they proved that in Tiger Stadium. They proved that even more so in Bryant Denny. And so I don't know that I agree with this statement from Saban, but as both Max and Tony have pointed out, Saban had some ulterior motives. He's motivating his team through the media. But it is funny, because on social media, as you would expect, it is an absolute dumpster fire of LSU fans just getting after the Nictator for those comments. So here we are. It is the final Monday in November. LSU is 11-0. They're going to take on A&M, a game that they'll have so much in the tank for, and that's a good thing. Alabama has to not just win on the road at Auburn. They've got to have some things fall their way. They could use an Oklahoma loss to Baylor in a Big 12 title game rematch. They could have a Utah slip-up either this week or the following in the Pac-12 title game, because the reality now, in my opinion, for Alabama, they have to have two things above them or in their range go the right way for them to get into the Final Four. I'll say it until I'm blue in the face. Georgia beats LSU, both of those teams are getting in. So that would keep Bama out. But right now, I get the feeling that Oklahoma would leapfrog Utah and Bama if the Sooners went out. I just kind of get that feeling. And I think Utah would probably leapfrog Bama at this point. The system would be very, very flawed if a one-loss Utah team that won their conference title game didn't get in over a one-loss Bama team that failed to make it to Atlanta. That would be bad news bears, I think, for this system. And you know how I feel about the Pac-12. I've even told you in this show how I feel about Utah's schedule. I'm just not sure that Bama would have done anything worthy enough to put them on the radar. And so CD's taking a call. Either we're going to take it or we're going to head to a break. Right now, we're playing a little bit of Radio Chicken, and I promise you I'm going to win that game every time. So, Clint, why don't we take our first time out in the hour, and when we return, Ruff and Rodrigue will be on the other side. We'll have more Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Is Acadiana's number one sports station, and you're listening to Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game, live online at 103.7thegame.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 103.7 The Game.
Back in, getting awfully close to that shade time of the afternoon. Clint, we had a lot of applicants. I mean, honestly, from college football alone, we had an awful lot of applicants. Kevin Mawai, former LSU Tiger, now a Pro Football Hall of Famer, a guy who recently wore his gold Canton jacket to coach in on the practice field. That was a boss move down in Tempe, Arizona. Kevin Mawai and Arizona State beat Oregon and helped to really change the landscape of the college football playoffs, at least for this year. And he tweeted out, "While drinking coffee from an Arizona State mug, sucks to be a Duck this morning," the day after the game. Thought that was pretty good shade. Then, of course, you've got your boy, Tom Herman, multiple times over, headbutting his players. What is that move, Clint? We've seen that occasionally from strength and conditioning coordinators. This was like four or five times in a row, barehead Tom Herman, helmet player. That's just a bad equation. I'm not really sure that you need that Spartacus moment before the third quarter of a football game.
Exactly. You never need that, and I think that definitely had a lot to do with how things went over with the Texas Longhorns. Sorry, Danny Jones.
Oh, boy. You got to get that in because you work,
of course,
every Friday night with STM football. So, look, there's no question. The college football ranks gave us a lot of ammunition, but leave it to Troy Aikman to take the cake. I shall explain, but not before I remind you and serve up your daily PSA that no one throws shade outside your home or business like the pros at Patio Center. Go to the website, patiocenter.com, and start to get a feel for the standing seam metal awnings that they have, the customized patio covers with the cypress accents, and know that it's more than just the inventory. It's more than just product. It's the vision, and it's the dedicated staff, starting top down with Mark at Patio Center. They're going to help really get you exactly where you want to be and create something that maybe you couldn't have even envisioned. That's the way they get down at the Patio Center. And make sure you go to the website first, patiocenter.com. They are the kings of customization, and it's never one size fits all for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at patiocenter.com.
Before we had our Sunday night football beatdown, Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay getting smoked over at San Francisco, there was the 325 game that was just brutal to watch if you love offensive football. Patriots 13, Cowboys 9 was the final score, and that's one that the Cowboys really could have used. They went in at 6-4. They went out at 6-5. They didn't score a single touchdown, and this is wild. Stephon Gilmore's having one of those years right now for the New England Patriots. Gilmore had one more reception, technically an interception, than the guy he was shadowing all afternoon, Amari Cooper. Let that sink in. I know it was sleeting and raining, and I don't care. Gilmore caught one more ball from Dak Prescott that was thrown for Cooper than Amari Cooper did. He was incredible. And yet, here's my shade. I watched the entire fourth quarter of that ball game, a good chunk of the third quarter as well. As it got down the home stretch, Troy Aikman was insufferable in what was supposed to be an unbiased broadcast with he and your guy Buck, CD. He was Homer Radio, Homer TV, and I just never expect that from guys at that level. And trust me, I am in and out of high school press boxes throughout this state. I do my best to keep it pretty down the middle, even though it's a hometown broadcast for Carrancro High. That's just kind of the way that I was raised in this business. And for the most part, I've never heard differently from Aikman. I'm not one of those guys that bashes him, Clint. I know you crush Aikman and Buck for their broadcast. You know, a little bit of the slide in. Okay, that's Collinsworth's thing, but you know what I'm saying. You go after Buck especially. Aikman, many times over, not just on the tripping call with the Dallas offensive lineman, Aikman was just absolutely ordering up the whambulance about how Dallas was supposed to play better in this game. They should be better this season. How come this isn't going their way? It was almost as if he was just mourning the end of the Cowboys' competitive portion of the season. Knowing how important that game was, Clint, I haven't seen it like that in a while. National television, a guy that's been doing it for as long as he has. I have a lot of respect for him. I think he's really good in that role. Aikman was hometown as much as it gets for the Cowboys late in that game, and it was sickening to listen to.
It was just overall disappointing. And, you know, we bring up Aikman and Buck. I think we got to just bring up Fox as a whole this weekend just was not great. I mean, we have Gronk and his antics, I guess you would call it, on the NFL and Fox halftime show during the Patriots game.
Another lesson.
Very disjointed.
Another lesson. Along with Les Miles in his stay between being at LSU and Kansas, that just because guys are interesting in the locker room while they're highly competitive, you sit them down and they're in a different environment. Miles was wildly mediocre as an analyst. Gronk, I think, will be the same. But I'm glad you brought that up. There was even more, though, from Fox.
There's even more from Fox, and we got to go back to Saturday. Joel Klatt, we don't normally bring him up, and honestly, I think this is a perfect opportunity to bring up the fact that he wanted mixing up his superheroes, and it makes you just really scratch your head and wonder, did he really just say it's like playing against Superman and the Avengers? What the hell kind of crossover is going on in his mind?
And what the hell's going on in my life that I'm now on a similar level of nerd as you are? What was that laugh? Okay, 4 years
ago. Better than the one I've had last couple weeks.
Throwing shade is not being directed at that laugh. 4 years ago, I would not have got why that was a bad reference from Joel Klatt, but now I also have been marveled up, and so I understand of what you speak. So not a great weekend with the Fox TV broadcast, but I just can't get over it because Aikman was leeching on for dear life to the Cowboys' playoff hopes in the fourth quarter of that game, and it was incredibly pathetic.
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PatioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
I think when we come back from break, we should put your laugh side by side with the Dave Schultz laugh. Stop doing it. Just no more laughing when your microphone is on. You can only frown when I call you to the mic. And now I got to dial up our final break of this hour. I want to get back to the Cajuns, the idea of Billy Napier's group being ranked, what comes next in their season. We'll discuss that, let you hear from Napier and his presser earlier today as well. And then James Buehr's coming your way at straight up 6 o'clock. Stick with us, a brief timeout, and then we're right back in with more of the good stuff. Bumper to Bumper Sports, live on 103.7 The Game.
This show won't protect your quarterback or cover downfield, but it's got animal control down pat.
Oh, if you see a possum, try to kill it, okay? It's not a pet.
Back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Well, unfortunately, it's not up to us. You know, we had an opportunity to maybe handle that ourselves, and we didn't, so that's in somebody else's hands, and the only thing we can worry about is the next team we play, and that's ULM.
That's Billy Napier asked if there's any daydreaming ahead to maybe hosting a Sun Belt Conference title game. Not really, he said. We had that opportunity to control it by beating App State. We'll get back to UL, but we do have a call to help kick off this final segment, our 5 o'clock hour. Waiting for us aboard the Ardco Equipment Hotline is Tim. Tim, I hear you want to respond to my Dallas Cowboys Troy Aikman shade. Hit me.
All right, so I am an avid Cowboys fan, man, and I have to agree with you 100%. Like, I was literally giggling at some of the stuff that this dude was saying at the end of the game. But all that being said, like, you know, I don't know if you're listening to Romy and them, but, like, they held Brady to one touchdown and, like, under, like, 250-yard passing or something like that. And I think they did okay, but I just got to agree with you, man. Normally it's like I like to butt heads, but typically I don't know what he was doing. It's like he was just in full-on, like, breakdown mode that the season's, like, it's like the end of the Cowboys. Like, yes. There's no more Cowboys or something.
Dude,
I don't know what he was doing.
He was legit mourning the end of the season on live television last night.
He really was, man, and it was crazy. Like, me and my buddy was sitting there giggling at it. I'm like, I don't know if he's just, like, off his rocker or what, but I don't know, man. It was some like, a sight to behold. But on another note, real quick, CD has a Muttley laugh, bro. If you don't know who Muttley is, Google it. So check that out when you get a minute.
I'll make you a promise. I've got about 7.5 more minutes of radio before I get to take a break, and then I will Google Muttley laugh. Thank you, Tim.
All right, bro.
You know what? Let's leave the Muttley laugh thing alone. That'll probably take care of itself. Hopefully, I didn't just encourage Acadiana to go Google something that's, morbid or gross or anything. Anyway, I have a comparison, Clint. The Cowboys this year are Auburn this year. Because he's right. They went on the road to New England and did a number on Brady in that offense. Truly. Auburn this year went on the road to Death Valley, and as much as anybody has, did a relative number on Joe Burrow and LSU's passing game. Clyde Edwards-Helaire beasted through them in the second half, but I think that I can make a strong case and the parallel between the Dallas Cowboys in 2019 and the Auburn Tigers in 2019. Unfortunately for you Cowboys fans, that makes Dak Prescott, yeah, you guessed it, freshman Bo Nix. That's part of the other equation as well. Sorry, but I'm not wrong. Prescott wants $40 million. He is not worth that much. He is a good, sometimes a very good NFL quarterback. He is not an elite NFL quarterback. Dallas, at least this year, equals Auburn. All right, let's get out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. I wonder if I just touched the nerve. John is with us, and John wants to talk Cowboys. Hit me.
Yes, yes, yes. Hey, I want to talk about the game yesterday. I'm not a Dallas fan, but I took the time and watched it. And that game was taken. The officials, that was not tripping. And I noticed when the Patriots have a close game at home, the officials just go off. And I noticed this back when they played Tennessee in the playoffs years ago. Officials went off. Then they played Jacksonville in that AFC Championship game. Jacksonville was giving it to them.
Yep.
Second half, the officials went off. Something is up with the Patriots and the officials. That's all I want to say.
Fair enough. Thank you, John. There we go. So we got his 2 cents in. And I get asked a lot by people who don't live in this area. I get asked, why do Saints fans hate the Patriots so much? Well, everything that happened with Spygate, or I guess you could say that didn't happen with Spygate, did happen with Bountygate. Belichick, Brady, relatively speaking, let off the hook, and Sean Payton nailed to the wall for an entire season. And now we live in an age, and it's starting to get beyond the point of just, you know, that hometown cry. Oh, we got jobbed. Okay, well, every fan base in the history of fan bases feels that way. I think it's starting to get beyond that point, right? You think back to the Saints and the Cam Jordan return at the Rams earlier this year that was overturned and started to change the way that referees called fumbles on the ground. Oh, you know what? We should probably let them go because then we can overturn them. But if we don't do that, then we've really put ourselves in a corner. The Saints, last year in the NFC title game, there's a rule that was made because of that, used against the Saints yesterday against the Panthers. We're kind of starting to get to a fairly comical point where if it can go against the Saints with the stripes, it does. John's point is that if it can go for the Patriots, it kind of seems to do that as well. So I don't know how much further I care to explore that right now. I ain't scared of the topic. Just not sure how much it's going to serve anybody's blood pressure well. You already hate the Patriots. I'm not going to make you feel any better about that. And so I'll save you a little bit of BP medicine. Clint, you are just giggling like a schoolgirl, but please don't actually laugh. I believe that's the subject here. Apparently you have found what Tim called about. Apparently you have found the Muttley laugh. Yeah, okay. I've heard that before.
Yeah, have you ever seen the cartoon like Wacky Races from back in the gap? You know what we're talking about.
All right, I'll let you air it out one final time. If Muttley ate cigarettes, then yes. See, don't do it.
It's so hard not to.
When you think about laughing, mute yourself. We need to get to that understanding between us.
I think we're getting there.
Professionally, maybe even personally. Don't laugh around me, even when the mics aren't on. We just need to come to some form of an understanding. And perhaps it's my fault for throwing shade at Troy Aikman and eliciting that type of Muttley laugh from you. That's a good drop there. So, Tim, we appreciate it. And thankfully, I didn't just tell you to Google something that was absolutely heinous. That was perfect and, you know, kid-friendly, kid-tested, mother-approved, all that good crap. Right? Good. I'm glad we all feel better about it. James Buehler's coming aboard, and that's always mother-friendly, in about 5 minutes. And then after that, Clint's going to tell you why the Raging Cajuns have a real chance of getting in the top 25. But since this was supposed to be a UL-themed segment, I'm going to squeeze in a little more Billy Napier from earlier today at his Monday press conference. And I want to go immediately to his thoughts on UL, ULM, and why Cajuns Warhawks will always be an important game.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's no question. I mean, regardless of what happened in the past, that this is always going to be an important game for each program. You know, it's just 3 or 4 hours up the road here. You know, I think that they're in our division, you know, and certainly there's tons of relationships here, right? These kids know each other. The staffs know each other. The alumni know each other. There's a lot at stake. So, you know, and I'm happy to do this that way, you know, because I think that gets the attention of our players, and that's what matters the most at this point.
how you perform against the Warhawks offense should tell the tale of this game. And after holding Troy to a measly 3, I think you have to like the Cajuns' chances. There are some services right now out there that have the Cajuns as the best group of 5 team in America. I think there is some respect that has to be paid to some teams, especially in that American Athletic Conference. Again, the Cajuns have a chance maybe to finish, in my opinion, as the best group of 5 team that's out there. But as you look around the landscape right now, again, you would have to give a nod. Cincinnati's the number 19 team in the country. Memphis, the number 18 team in the country. They're both 10-1, and they both play each other this Friday at 2:30. So there are some other cats out there. Appalachian State, certainly, which beat UL in Lafayette. But I think the Cajuns have a chance to finish in the top 25 and be that last and final team standing atop the Group of Five Mountain. I'll let Clint describe that toward the end of today's program. But right now, we are done with 2 hours, 30 minutes more to go, and then it's Monday Night Football. That is one heck of a lineup. Ben Love alongside the human Muttley Laugh. We'll be right back in with more Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Right back at it. We are ready to roll our third and final hour. On a Monday, we've taken you through your paces for LSU, UL, the Saints. Now it's time that we all get preppy. So as Bumper to Bumper Sports bounces back in on 103.7 The Game, Ben Love, the famous Clint D, you know what time it is. We got to bring aboard the Artco Equipment Hotline, James Buers, Acadiana prep sports writer for the Acadiana Advocate. James, it's great to have you back aboard. How are you?
I'm doing well, Ben. How are you doing, man?
It's quarterfinal and semifinal time. You know your boy is in a happy place. But let's look back to last week, and it was a wild upset Friday night. For my money, Catholic New Iberia winning in Crowley, avenging a regular season loss of the Notre Dame Pios, far and away the most surprising outcome. I'll get your reaction to that.
Yeah, no, it was surprising to a certain degree. I mean, you know, maybe we should have seen it coming to some degree, considering Catholic High had won 8 straight games going into it, and although they had not played a particularly strong district schedule, their scores would lead you to believe that they were improving each week. I mean, they were outscoring their opponents by something like 300 points, I think, during district play, and they cruised in their first round game against St. Thomas Aquinas. And, you know, these two teams have played, I'm talking about Catholic High and Notre Dame, I've played a ton in recent years. I think it was this game was the 11th time in 9 years, and obviously they had played for state championships the previous 2 seasons. So there wasn't a lot that each team didn't know about each other, but it sounds like Catholic High was able to pull some tricks up their sleeves. Brendan Dess is as good a game planner, play caller as there is in the Acadiana area. And their key guys stepped up for them when they needed to. You know, Trey Amos had the game-winning touchdown run. And also, you know, they were able to force some turnovers. I know it was wet conditions too, so I'm sure that played a factor in kind of some sloppy play at times. But still, Catholic was able to find a way to win. In spite of some sloppy play from both sides, and you know, to think that they're in the semifinals shouldn't be a surprise because they've been to the state finals the last 2 years. But you know, when you're playing a Notre Dame who they themselves are always in the state championship game, it's kind of hard to believe that, you know, Catholic is going to win this game. But you got to give Catholic a lot of credit for doing what, I guess not a lot of people expected them to do.
James, let's stay on the Select side of things, and how in the world do we begin to describe Select Division 4? Both of the top 2 seeds lost at home. They were area powers all season long. Vermilion Catholic, Opelousas Catholic. In fact, VC's, I believe, only blemish on the season was losing to OC Now they're both gone pecan. I didn't see that coming. I guess what comes next for that bracket? And man, how do we make sense of that?
Yeah, no, it's really interesting. I think all four of the top seeds in that division have been eliminated because Calvary Baptist lost as well, and also Ascension Catholic lost. And Ascension Catholic had played LCA for the Division IV state championship the last 2 years. So it's kind of strange to see that happen. But, you know, it's a bracket that had a lot of really talented teams. You know, I saw Country Day play VC on Friday. And, this is the second time I've seen them play. You know, Country Day was in the semifinals last year against Catholic High in Division III, and I was at that game, and I was incredibly impressed by their quarterback, Justin Ibieta, who committed to Tulane. And he was really good again last week against VC. You know, they were running the ball a lot more because of the conditions, but, you know, he finished with over 100 yards rushing. And then late in the game when they needed to, he engineered a game-winning drive, including a 40-yard touchdown pass. So, you know, I think Country Day certainly has a chance to win this bracket, but they're going to have to play Southern Lab, I believe. They're going to have to play, I forget that the team that they're playing, the team that beat Calvary Baptist. Southern Lab's on the other side of the bracket. But regardless, it's a bracket that has some quality teams beyond the top four seeds. So I guess we shouldn't be too surprised that there were some tough games for those top seeds in the second round.
It'll be Country Day at Wachita Christian.
That's
and
it. Yep.
The other OC, Wachita Christian, beat Calvary Baptist 49-47, an absolute barn burner. Our guest on 103.7 The Game, it's our guy James Buers with the Acadiana Advocate. I'll go over to the non-select side, and here we are. It's the quarterfinal round in Class 4A. You look up, and Cairncrow, Westgate, Brobridge, all still alive. To stay alive, James, all three would have to win on the road. Brobridge taking a trip to Edna Carr. Westgate is going up north to take on Neville. And I'll have Cairncrow at Warren Easton Black Friday night on Z105.9. So I don't know what you think of those three teams and their chances. Those are three really good programs they're playing. But I'll get your take on the matchups in Class 4A.
Yeah, if I had to pick one that had the best chances of winning Friday, I would probably go with Cairncrow. I'd like the way they played all year, and especially, you know, since Traylon Prejean's gone down, they seem to have adjusted really, really well and are putting up points on a weekly basis, on top of the fact that their defense is playing phenomenally as of late as well. Now they're going to have a stiff challenge against Warren Easton. Easton has a terrific running back in Ashad Clayton. I think he recently committed to Colorado, and he had, like, over 200 yards against Tioga in the second-round game. So, obviously, that's going to be a point of emphasis for Cairncrow is trying to contain him. But, I wonder if Easton's going to be able to stop Cairncrow's offense the way they're moving at this point. And, you know, as for Brobridge, they're having to play a three-time state champion in Carr, you know, on the road. So that's going to be a huge challenge for them. And they've been having to deal with injuries during the playoffs, including to Dartrevion Gerard, who did play last week, but he was limited, from what I understand. So I think it's going to be tough for Brobridge this week. And then, obviously, Westgate's having to go all the way to Neville, which is a long trip. But keep in mind, you know, Westgate beat SDM and SDM beat Neville. So, I know it's different matchups with, you know, different personnel on the field. But if you're going to do the transitive property game, Westgate might have a chance of beating Neville in this quarterfinal matchup. And, of course, I think Westgate most times has the better athlete than most teams they will play. So, if that counts for anything, I think Westgate will have a shot in this game.
Another few moments with James Buers on 103.7 The Game. Let's stay on the non-select side, and you've got Acadiana going to take on Airline, a 1-8 game. And what the Wrecked Rams did in shutting out Walker last week, an incredibly impressive result. Is anybody going to be able to challenge Coach McCall and these Rams? They look like an absolute runaway freight train.
Yeah, no, I'm skeptical that anybody will be to stop them, at least not their offense. You know, there might be a team that could score some points on them, but their defense is playing terrifically, at least last week they did against a Walker team that had some really talented skill guys. I think one of their receivers had almost 200 yards receiving in their first round win. It wasn't an easy game for Acadiana, at least on paper, but they looked incredibly dominant. Dylan Minette breaks the school record for rushing yards in a career previously set by Allie Broussard. So that's a terrific accomplishment for Dylan. But yeah, I doubt seriously anybody's going to be able to stop their offense at this point. They, you know, Acadiana could see Zachary in the semifinals. That seems like a realistic possibility. But I don't, you know, And, of course, Acadiana lost to Zachary in the quarterfinals last year. So aside from the opportunity to get to the state championship game, I'm sure Acadiana will carry even an extra chip on their shoulder, considering Zachary eliminated them last year, if that matchup comes to pass. But I just can't see them Acadiana losing to Airline this week.
James, how do we even begin to analyze Terry Martin and Lauraville, a 6-4 team? They won a single game a year ago, and now they've won two straight. They're into the quarterfinals. That's incredible to me.
Yeah, no, it really is. And Terry deserves a lot of credit. You know, he was the Brobridge coach and left for Lauraville in early July last year. And, you know, it was a purely family decision for him. His family has lived in Lauraville for years. His wife is the principal at the elementary school there. He had his eldest son, Jack David, was set to enter the high school in the seventh grade last year. So he wanted to be close to the family, and he realized that he might not get another opportunity to coach his son if he didn't take the Lauraville job opening then. So he took it, and, you know, everything had to be kind of accelerated as far as off-season preparation. So they were kind of behind the eight ball to begin with. But things were made even worse when they had a ton of injuries in the early portion of the season, including season-ending injuries to quarterback Zy Alexander, their best overall player who's committed to Southeastern. And then who's ended up becoming their best receiver, Logan Girard, was also injured for out for the season last year as well. So they really struggled. Their schedule last year was brutal. So they won only one game. But this year, I think they added more kids to the program. They remained relatively healthy all year, especially having Zy all year has been critical. And, you know, they seem to play really good offense. I think that's the biggest thing. You know, Terry, I think, is a really good offensive play caller, and they've, I think, adjusted to his scheme and offensive system really well. And, you know, they jumped out to a huge lead against Mangum, early in that second-round game. But Mangum roared back, took the lead, and was kind of back and forth late. But Logan Girard, who actually was struggling with drops early in the game, bounced back, called a 20-yard touchdown pass from Zy Alexander to take the lead. And then Lauraville, you know, Mangum drove all the way down to the 5-yard line and with about a minute and 20 seconds left and ended up fumbling at the 1-yard line and a Lauraville defender caught in the end zone for a touchback. So miraculously, they kind of survived that game, but still, they're on to the quarterfinals for the first time since, I think it's 2013. And it's an incredible turnaround story for the Lauraville Tigers.
All right, we're going back and forth, James. So we went select and the non-select. Now let's go back over into the select and private side. LCA, an easy win, I think it's fair to say. Now they're going to have Neil Weiner and Dunham coming to town. The Dunham Tigers, fresh off a trip over to New Orleans, where they beat Arch Manning and Isidore Newman. Do you expect a test at all for the LCA Knights? And knowing kind of what that bracket looks like, I mean, is this thing theirs to lose at this point?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, obviously, if they end up having to play a team like Catholic High or St. Charles Catholic in the state championship game, that would be a huge test for LCA. But I would think that they could at least get to the state championship game. I was a little surprised that Dunham beat Newman in the quarterfinals. I thought, just based on results I had seen this year, and obviously I heard a lot about Arch Manning, I thought Newman would win that game, but you got to give Dunham a lot of credit. It sounds like they played really terrifically on defense. So we'll see how good Dunham's defense is against LCA. You know, LCA offensively this year has been kind of up and down at times. You know, they maybe struggled to find offensive identity, but it seems like late in the season they've started to figure it out. You know, they used two quarterbacks in Aaron Rodgers and Ryan Roberts. And the running game lately has been pretty good, too, with Logan Gabriel and Dalen Gondrin. So, of course, they've got a terrific return specialist in Sage Ryan, who's as good as there is in the state. So I do think LCA should win this game. I just think their defense is way too dominant, and that's been kind of their backbone all year. But it'll be interesting to see what Dunham offers on Friday.
It's always fun to catch up. James, hope to see you in a press box sooner than later. Although I'll shoot you straight, I'm at Warren Easton this Friday. If Karen Crow wins, decent chance that they're at Lakeshore the Friday after that. So if you're going to catch up with me, you're probably going to have to drive east.
Well, I actually might be at that Karen Crow game this week because I'll be in town for the holidays. I'm from New Orleans originally, so I actually might be at that Karen Crow game this week, so I'll see you there.
There we go. That would work out great for everybody. He is James Buers with the Acadiana Advocate. Make sure to keep up with this coverage online and make sure you get out to the newspaper as well. All right, we got to hit our final break in today's program, but stick and stay. We got more Bumper to Bumper Sports on the way. And after this timeout, you'll have more of the good stuff on 103.7 The Game.